bitch.
Mass Effect there. Hey, great restart, bud. Great job.
Wow, was that cold or what?
Second in front. Try to catch that group. Oh, why? I'm pushing like a hell.
It is undrivable. There's puddles, aquaplaning everywhere. Unbelievable.
Behind you, very close. Okay, okay, Anna. It's fun, okay, Timo, keep going, it's fun. It is done, hold
on. Hold on, hold on. And in sunshine, well done, well done. Pole position, fastest lap, and the race win. Job done, job done. Take that.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. This week I'm joined by Todd from FormulaOneBlog.com, and later on we'll be joined by Bob Barsha from Speed TV. We're going to do a little review of the F1 season so far. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing great, Cole. How are you?
I am swell.
Super, super. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's a real honor.
Oh, the honor is mine to be doing a show with a legend like yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, hardly a legend, more infamous probably.
That'll work too. You're higher than me on the blogging food chain.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, but yeah, it's terrific to be, gosh, on episode number 2. So from all of us at F1B, we congratulate PlanetIRL.com on their new website. Looks great, and the new podcast, and it's terrific. We're excited for you.
It is very exciting and lots of hard work, and we'll have Lisa on later to discuss some of the new features of the site. Let's just jump into some of the headlines here. First off, everyone at PlanetIRL, and a lot more people than that, want to send their deepest condolences to the Surtees family. The tragedy this week at Brands Hatch, it, in my opinion, should never happened. And it's a great driver that's gone far too soon, only 18 years old. So let him rest in peace.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a dark day, Cole, and it's nothing you ever want to see in motorsport, and no. The risk is always there, and it's sobering days like this that remind us that ultimately it's a dangerous sport.
And in that weekend, I was actually halfway through a post about why racing has become too safe and why we need to be going faster and faster, and then that happens, so
yeah.
I had to delete that one for now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough call, and it's interestingly, I think Hendry, this is kind of galvanized, if you will. There's a lot of outpouring. You know, obviously, genuinely a terrific young man, and his father certainly being a former champion, and I think you know, it's such a freak accident. It's really caught everybody off guard, and we haven't had those kind of just freak accidents and certainly fatalities in quite a while, and I think it just really galvanized the F1 community, not just F2, but F1 as a whole, and really the racing world. I've seen outpourings from people in IndyCar and other racing series, so yeah, certainly our condolences at F1B would go out to the Surtees family, John and Jane, and their daughters. It's a tragic event.
Yes, and I know it's a budget series, and I know you disagree with this, but you don't skimp on safety, and I don't really want to argue about his death, but I do want to make a point and say that it never should have happened, and those cars are, it's a ladder series, and it should be cost contained, but you don't cut things like wheel tethers, you cut the cars or the operating budgets, but you really, this is a wake-up call to say, you know, get your priorities in order. So,
yeah, it is a budget-driven series, and you and I talked about this a little bit over Twitter, Cole. We were talking about the fact that on a budget series that you don't have unlimited resources for safety, tires, engines, chassis, that kind of thing. But you made a very astute point that I thought probably does bear some discussion. As we were arguing, there should be no quarter spared for safety. And I was arguing resources and budget driven. You brought up the point that is Brands Hatch really a circuit that's suited to open wheel racing at that kind of speeds and runoff areas, et cetera. And I thought, you know, if anything bears maybe a little scrutineering, that may be it.
Yeah, it was fine back in the days when we were going slower, but these cars are going too fast, and it's just not safe anymore. That wall was only a few feet from the circuit. And to block a tree, cut down the tree. We don't need the tree.
Yeah.
And I know the Al Gore fans out there will hate me for that, but it's time to think about safety and not just saving money. So
No, it's a very good point.
So moving on from that, we don't want to get weighted down with issues like that. We have the official replacement of my boy, Sebastian Bourdais, with Jaime Alguersuari. Correct me if I'm saying that wrong.
I think you're pretty darn close.
I hope so, but no one else can say it, so I think we're okay.
Except his mom.
Well, she named him that, so.
Yeah.
Todd and I saw before we started here that Sebastian Loeb also said that he might hop in that seat after Abu Dhabi when his Citroen contract is up later this year. So we might have three drivers in that seat over the course of the year. None of them, of course, are four-time Champ Car champions and deserve that seat more than most of the people in the field, a.k.a. Nick Heidfeld. What is your take?
You know, we talked about this on our podcast too. I feel bad for Bourdais. I still think Sebastian's a really good driver. I don't know that he got a fair shake in F1. I think he's working with, I don't want to say inferior goods. It's an F1 car. STR car is a great car. It's just not as good as the rest. And I think he's got a car that isn't on par with the rest of the grid. And I don't know. You know, I think Franz Tost is pretty hard on drivers. You know, you recall Scott Speed went through this issue with STR, and they, you know, claim that, you know, he was not doing well, and gosh, if you compared him to, you know, Tonio Liuzzi, he wasn't doing any worse than he was, and I would argue that Bourdais wasn't really doing much worse than Buemi has been, so it's a bad deal all the way around. I tend to think, though, and I'll stick by my guns, that one of our contributing editors, Paul Charsley, brought up the point, and I thought it was very astute, is that, you know, certain guys are just really made for certain cars, and I happen to believe that Sebastian Bourdais, after watching at the 24-hour Le Mans this year, I think that guy is a terrific sports car driver, and would love to see him in a Peugeot at Le Mans. I think that is it would be a more relaxed atmosphere. And, you know, at least Sebastian, he was one of the drivers, as Grace and I said on our podcast, that he just he got kind of lost in that folding of F1 when the seats weren't available, and you had a struggling series in America and Champ or Kart, and when that series closed, he just, you know, he just got caught out. And, you know, maybe the you know, when he rolled the bones, they just didn't turn in his direction. But I think in the long run, I think he'll land on his feet, and I'd love to see him at Le Mans. I really would. I know you're a big fan of IndyCar. You'd like to see him back there, and that certainly would be an option as well. But if there's any consolation, I guess, Cole, it's that it's taking two drivers to replace your one.
Well, good. And if I'm them, at least let them try Hungary and try the updates, and don't dump them before he even gets a chance. They recycle drivers like most of your blog staff goes through Dunkin' Donuts.
which is the official
donut of F1B, by the way.
Yes, it is, and they don't give us a dime for that, which shamelessly they should. But, yeah, absolutely, they do. They go through those drivers, and I don't know. And, you know, Cole, there's a lot of argument whether, you know, Felipe Massa himself today said that Alguersuari is too young. The guy's only driven an F1 car in straight lines. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a lot could be made. I mean, this kid could come out and prove us all wrong, but
they did that with Vettel, so.
Yeah. They're looking for another Vettel, and Sebastian wasn't it. Clearly, I was expecting Sebastian to be that, but Bourdais anyway. But yeah, it's a bad move. I feel bad for Bourdais. I'm not as big a fan as you are, and I think he's a good guy. I think he just got the wrong end of the stick. It's unfortunate, but you know, this world is littered with the corpses of failed F1 drivers here.
Yeah, and I think one of the worst things that team did was when Berger left. Gerhard Berger, he's one of the last true old stalwarts from the good old days of F1, and he cared about the drivers, not just the bottom line. And all we have left of those is Frank Williams, and he really doesn't do anything. And we need to go back to the 80s, and we need to bring back the racing, and not just look at people like Alguersari, who bring a sack full of Repsol money, and they don't have, they're 18 years old, and it's really becoming just, you can't say enough about it, really.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation. The complexion of F1's changed so much. The pay-to-drive scenario has been around for a long, long, long time. And you'll find that back in the 80s, even prior to Senna coming in, there was people that were paying to drive. And so that situation's always been a part of it. This kid has a lot of Repsol money, or at least that's the rumor. That always helps take the sting out of STR's P&L. And, from that side, you can understand, but it's not that I'm a big fan of it. I'm not, but gosh, it's hard to not go after that money. And who knows, Cole, in the long run, this could have been the prime mover of the whole decision.
And you were saying earlier about Lamont, and he's good in the Peugeot, and he was good at Lamont this year, but I want him in IndyCar Series. And I know that's kind of selfish, but I want him here where we can see him and not over in some prototype that doesn't get as much attention as we would get over here. But he didn't get a fair chance, and I think he really could have done well if Arrows hadn't folded after 2002, because he was going to be there.
Mm-hmm. And
when they folded, he lost his chance and had to go to Champ Car and dominated there, and then came over to STR and they dumped him. So he just can't catch a break at all.
Well, he could have unproven business in IndyCar. Mm-hmm. My first choice for him would be a ride in IndyCar, no question. But I don't follow that series, admittedly, like you do, or certainly Mike and Sean over at Open Paddock. But I just don't know that there's a whole lot of opportunities or rides open over there. I know Paul Tracy had to look long and hard to get his rides.
Don't even get me started on that guy.
On GT, yeah.
I heard a story at the beginning of the season that Bourdais had a seat at NHL, Newman Haas, and he was definitely going there, and he had the sponsors, and they already had the seat fitted practically, and then STR called him back up and said, we'll take you. So they brought in Doornbos and had him come in and wreck every piece of machinery they have. So Seb has driven one IRL race, and that was the 2005 500.
Yep.
He was in the top 10. He was involved in Danica's half spin and finished 12th. And he was doing great that day, but got taken out by the queen herself. So everywhere he goes, he just gets shafted. So
Yeah, I think he'd fare well in IndyCar, though.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Another driver in the silly season talks is the lovely and intelligible Nelson Piquet Jr. He's just an epic pile of F1 rejectory, that guy is.
Yeah, they're a little dodgy about what's going to happen with Nelson, though, aren't they?
I wouldn't wish ill on many people, but he is bad. There are so many people they could put in that seat that would do better. And it's another example of ride buyers and getting your last name to get you a ride. So
Yeah. Nelson is my hunch is that he's been on this race-by-race sort of, warning.
Probation.
This probation. Yeah, exactly. He's got to be a year now, And I think Renault has gone to the wall with him here. I'd like to see him do well. I'd like to see the kid do well, but there again, this may go back to the fact that just F1 cars may not be his gig. You may put him in a sports car, a prototype. You may put him in Indy car, something like that, and he may flourish.
Oh, God, no.
Put him in Indy, yeah.
he was not bad in GP2, though.
Right.
He needs consistency, and I don't think he has enough time left, and I think he's gone at the end of the season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he makes it through the end of the season. That would be my prophetic insight.
Your prophetic insight is always appreciated around here.
Yeah. I don't know how good it is, but that would be my hunch.
Well, who do they bring in, though?
Well, they've got Roman Grosjean right behind him, and so they'd bring him up, yeah.
Or, and this is just a hunch, and I posted this on your forum.
You're going to say Bourdais, aren't you?
I posted this on your forum earlier. They could hire Bourdais. Because Fred, as you call him, is going to Ferrari, and I would almost guarantee that at this point.
Yeah.
Because Kimi is going to go retire to a Coke and an ice cream bar in rally cars in Finland somewhere, and they need a driver, and I think Alonso is their guy. That leaves two open seats at Renault, one for Bourdais and one for Senna. There we go. Let the rumors begin.
Or Grosjean, either one. But I don't think it's a bad move. I think a French driver, French car maker, it's not a bad idea. You know, would that team sort of culture characteristic favor a guy like Bourdais? It may. I don't know. So I certainly wouldn't wrinkle my nose at that move.
It'll never happen, but it's thinking anyways.
Yeah, it's good to be positive.
Positive. It's what we aim for around here. More silly season rumors. Jacques Villeneuve is rumored very much to be going to USF1. And I said something about that months ago when I heard about this. There are no F1 caliber American drivers out there right now. So I think they should go with someone that can speak English at least. And an experienced veteran to get the team moving, and then they can bring an American driver later, Summerton or Rossi or someone like that. Danica's definitely not going, she said, and we all knew that from the beginning because she can't drive an Indy car. What qualifies her to drive an F1 car? So what do you think about Villeneuve coming back? I know you're a big fan of his.
Oh, JV's okay. Here's my feeling. I don't think it's the right move, but let me put it this way. It's about the only move if they're looking for a North American driver. They're the only American driver of recent history that's had experience in F1, Scott Speed.
I think he's committed to NASCAR now. So
well, I think he is too, and I don't know that is an option, and it could be contractual. So what are you really left with? And I think your point is spot on, Cole. I think you're looking for an English-speaking guy who has some brand equity in America. Mm-hmm. You know, JV, after all, won in you know, open wheel in America. And so go ahead, Cole.
He had an ill-fated attempt at NASCAR that lasted all of 2 weeks, I think. So
Right. So people kind of know him in the circle circuit. So if you look at JV, it's an understandable choice. However, in the whole grand scheme of things, I probably don't think it's the best choice from a pure team development and long-term goal for the team. I think it makes sense. He's North American, he's Canadian, and who doesn't love a lovable Canadian? We all do. So
love,
I think that makes
Canadians.
Sense. Yeah, that's right. Gotta love the Canucks. And so, and I think that makes sense. So I can understand. If he announces in the next couple of weeks he's driving for USF1, it wouldn't shock me. It would be a decision born from getting at least North American veteran, as you said, that could help with car development and those kind of things. I don't recall JV being, and people have argued against my point here, but I don't recall him being such a car development guy. And a lot of people say, well, he was hobbled at, you know, BAR, he couldn't develop a car. Yeah, I get that. But I still, even at Williams and those things, I'm not sure he was. So it makes sense. However, if it were me, you know, as you said, Cole, you're going to get a veteran in there for the team and then get a young Summerton or somebody in the other car that you can start developing. There's other veterans out there that I think are still involved in the current formula current regulation cars, and Ant Davidson, Christian Kleen, some of these third drivers, Pedro De La Rosa, there's some guys out there that are very familiar with the 09 regulations, which are going to be, for all intents and purposes, the 2010 regulations, that I think make more sense. I think JV's been out of it long enough to know, or long enough now, that it's going to be a little difficult for him just getting back into the whole, you know, mechanical side and regulation side and knowing what to and how to develop the car.
If I'm Peter Windsor, I would take him, and they just need someone to build the team around. They need a veteran to design a team around, not a young guy like a Rossi or a Summerton or someone like that. So if you're Peter Windsor, who do you hire?
You know, that's a really good question, and there are a lot of people out there. I'm not so sure if I don't take a long look at Ant Davidson or a Christian Kleen or, to be real frank with you, a Sebastian Bourdais.
Yes. There you go. I like that idea.
Yeah. You know, Sebastian's got brand equity in America. He's won 4 titles, and people in America know him. You know?
Yeah. They don't like him, but they know him.
Not everybody likes him, but, you know, you can't please everybody.
Yes. Especially a certain old fart Canadian that needs to get out of a seat and let the young kids play in the sandbox for once.
I'm so sorry I missed the Twitter war there you had. So.
I can't stand that guy. You don't mess with the Seb and then come back and act all cool. You're old. Get out of the car. Let the kids play now.
Well, we did give PT the Bravado Award last week for slamming on Bourdais for getting fired. So.
I heard that. You know what? I've always said Bourdais is cocky, and he's very confident in his ability, but he's good enough, and he has the results to back it up. If you're good enough to back up the results, go ahead and be cocky because you've earned it. Paul, you've crashed all year. You don't deserve it, so just shut up and crawl back home.
Well, irrespective of what you think of Bourdais, you don't win 4 titles on the trot in any series and not – you know what you're doing. I can't argue with that. You just can't. And that doesn't matter if it's NASCAR, USAC, Nationwide, IndyCar. It doesn't matter. 4 titles in a trot against that field's, you know, best competitors is not easy.
Yeah. Also with USF1, they've said their new car will be ready in October. I really hope they're going to do good, and I really hope they succeed and bring, you know, respect back to the United States in Formula One. But I honestly, they're going to be Force India level Marty Roth Award for excellence in chicanery at the back of the field. I don't want to see them fail.
Yeah.
There's so much riding on this because all the Euro snobs and F1, you know, bureaucrats already think we Americans are, you know, just puny colonists. So I'm sending this out to Peter Windsor, even though he's not listening. Don't fail.
Yeah.
Please.
That's not what we need. You know, it's going to, my opinion on that, it's Ken Anderson and Peter, you know, good guys. They know all the right people. They have the right resources surrounding them in their location in America. It's a motorsport, you know, Mecca over there, and companies that exist solely to supply the motorsport industry, irrespective of whether it's NASCAR or F1. And we had Peter Windsor, Mark Hallam had Peter Windsor interview on our podcast a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, the technical resources it takes to put even a low-tech car and compete at NASCAR's level is a very technical process, and these companies over here are. So I think they've got all that down. I gotta say, I think they'll build a decent chassis.
Yeah,
but it's all going to come down to the lump, I think. And if they're going to go with Cosworth, Cole, then it really does start to – the big question is, will Cosworth field a V8 next year that is competitive? And that's what we all want to know. Now, Cosworth just this week said that they – I think James Allen had a great piece on his blog about that and said that Cosworth feels very confident that their engine's going to be as competitive as the rest of them. And if it is – then, Cole, I think, you know, maybe USF1 could stand to do well, you know. And you say a Force India, and I know you mean that, you know, in jest, but Force India actually isn't looking that bad this year, you know.
They're looking better than McLaren.
They're looking better. Yeah, they're looking better than Maka, and that's the, you know, parent team. So Kind of hard to argue. If I, you know, if you could get a midfield performance out of USF1 in their first year, I'd be elated with that.
And that'd be great because I don't have a driver to cheer for anymore because mine got unjustly fired, and I need it's USF1 or Rosberg, and I haven't decided yet until the driver lineup comes out next year.
Yeah. Well, you're in good stead with Nico. He's a good guy.
He's going to go far eventually. If he gets away from Williams, he'll succeed.
Yeah, he's a good kid. He's well-spoken, intelligent, and he's got skill, and I'd really like to see him have an opportunity. He's a good guy.
He's like Nelson Piquet, but he can actually drive.
Well, he actually does what he says that he came there to do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I still think Nelson was probably premature in his move to F1. I think he probably could have used another season in open wheel in GP2, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it seems like they're rushing him up the ladder these days, but
yeah,
we won't get into
it.
The ladder system in Europe to get into F1 is so convoluted, and it is the same here, so you can go on endlessly discussing, and it's bad. You have ladders to nowhere, so.
Yeah.
And I'm going off on a tangent here, as Donald Davidson would say. So we'll move on to Mark Webber, re-signed with Red Bull in 2010. Well, duh. Are you not going to come back? And you all know I'm not a big Webber fan if you listen to the last podcast. He's not consistent enough, and he's old, so...
He's a lot younger than I am, so...
In F1
standards... But F1 terms, yes, you're right.
Cool. In F1 standards, he's like Rubens Barrichello status.
Right.
Your gray hair, bald spot. Get out of F1.
Right. Well, this move makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, they've got a guy here that's been with the team who has slogged out the difficult years, helped them develop the car. I think Mark, as for his consistency and those kind of things, I understand that. And I like you, and certainly Grace feels this way. You know, we all got tired of hearing, well, this is going to be Mark's year, and Mark is awesome, and he is as good as everyone, you know, is hyping him to be, and we just never saw it. And I think he falls off the radar, and we kind of file him in the same sort of category as a Nick Heidfeld or some of these guys, which, they're really good drivers. They're very tidy drivers. They're great at development. But is anybody earmarking them for a title? And probably not. But here he won his first race. This is really where the rubber hits the road, ultimately, Cole, is if Red Bull has surpassed Braun and they've got a great car, Mark's going to have to put up or shut up. But I think this is the guy. It's the right move. It's stick with your team. It's starting to gel. Sebastian Vettel's working well with Mark Webber. You got a veteran, young guy learning. It makes sense. It's a good move for Red Bull.
He's a lot like someone like a Kovalainen, and I know that's completely wrong, but if you think about it in the long term, he's born to be a second driver. He's not a lead driver. He's kind of just off on the sidelines, backing you up. He's a Barrichello-esque driver, and I don't think he'll ever work out of that, so...
Yeah, if he's going to have a chance, it's going to be here with Red Bull now that they look to have bridged the gap. So we'll have to see. And the same could be said of Barrichello now that Braun has been doing so well. This was Rubens' year to put up or shut up.
I think Rubens will retire at the end of this year. I think he's had enough of being Mr. Second Place all the time. And if he doesn't win this year, you better get out of his way because he's not going to be happy.
Yeah, no, he's not.
That
I think Rubens, you could end up seeing him bow out and go over and drive for his friend Gilles Deferrin over at ALMS, so that would be my hunch.
That team's not going to be in ALMS next year, so...
Well, true, yeah. Yeah.
I'm 99.9% sure they'll be with another F1 reject, Takuma Sato, in IndyCar next year as a two-car team, so... some people are just born to be that second driver, that Rubens Barrichello on a team, and I think Webber is one of those guys.
Yeah.
I think we've covered most of the headlines from this week, so I think we can move on to our exclusive interview with Speed TV's Bob Varshanel. We'll come back to some more headlines after this, so stick around. Joined by Bob Varsha from Speed TV. He's a great inspiration to me because I would love to go into broadcasting like he did. So we'll just start in with some questions for him here. You've been the voice of F1 in the United States for over two decades now. What is it that draws you to Formula One? What is it that makes you stick around with it?
Well, I suppose if I were blatantly honest about it, it was when I was a very young broadcaster and I was offered the opportunity to succeed Jackie Stewart back in the days of ESPN, that I jumped at the opportunity to be involved in the World Championship, as anyone would in that situation, I'm sure. It was kind of an awkward circumstance. Jackie, of course, had worked for many years for ABC TV, and cable was just exploding around the world, and cable's a bit of a more basic enterprise than network television is, and I think Jackie was not entirely happy with the circumstances under which we worked, which is understandable, coming off the heyday of buy it, invent it, money is no object television. But one way or another, I was invited to take his place at an event he could not make, and one thing led to another, and soon I took the position. And so it was basically a job opportunity as much as anything else at the time. Mm-hmm. But the sport is fascinating, and I love it. And that's what I've been doing in the main in the years since, along with a lot of other different things. I covered a lot of different sports for ESPN at the time. And since coming to Speed in 1999, obviously motorsports has been the main thing. But I've done sports cars and lots of other things, drag racing, motorcycles, you name it, in addition to the non-competition related things like Barrett Jackson and so forth. So, you know, it's all part of the whole spectrum of things available once you're employed in the business. And it's storytelling, really. Mm-hmm. And that was something I was equipped to do through my law school experiences of working in the law for about 4 years before the television opportunity came up. So, you know, if it weren't Formula One, in all honesty, it would be something else, but I'm glad I am where I am.
Mm-hmm. And I've wanted to ask you for a long time, and I finally got the opportunity. What is it like to work with two completely unique personalities like Steve Matchett and David Hobbs on a weekly basis like you do?
Well, it's wonderful, really. You know, you're filling airtime, and as I mentioned a moment ago, it's about storytelling. David and Steve are two very different individuals. They come from very different perspectives as a former driver and a former mechanic, as to, you know, how the event unfolds, you know, in each individual perspective going into an event, how you arrive at the optimum condition for the car, drive the best race, hopefully be successful. You know, they are very different in their approach, but they're very similar as personalities, and we all get along really well. So it all works out. You know, we can have fun with each other. We can, you know, tell stories at the expense of each other, and the whole thing really works out well. So, you know, it really gives me, as the host, a lot of options, you know, a lot of different directions we can go with the commentary, knowing there's somebody there who can always, you know, support whatever direction I choose to direct to go with what we're talking about.
And we really appreciate, you know, the commentary you guys have been providing for years now. You're a great team, and you really bring the sport to us, so it's very personable to us. Another one here for you. If you were Bernie Ecclestone for a day, what would be the first thing you would change?
What would be the first thing I would change? Well, I think the first thing I'd do is chop the cost of being involved in Formula One. I understand why Bernie does it, and now he's in a situation where financially he has to do it, because he has an awful lot of debt he needs to repay. But I think Formula One and lots of other forms of motorsports, I think NASCAR is in the same boat in this regard. They've gotten so used to the easy availability of money and the big budgets that manufacturers and sponsors are willing to spend and the popularity of their series that has sort of induced the paying public to being willing to spend more and more money for tickets and concessions and parking and accommodations and all the sorts of things that go into the fan enjoying a race weekend. And the fan is really what it's all about. In Formula One in particular, these numbers have risen to astronomical heights, and as none of us need to be told, the economy is not in a situation right now where people have that kind of disposable income. So all things being equal, and I were to put myself in Bernie's position, I would make it a lot cheaper to be involved in Formula One and a lot cheaper to come and enjoy Formula One. But I'm sure that's much easier to say than it is to do.
Todd, did you have a question?
I do, Bob. My name is Todd. I'm at FormulaOneBlog.com and a different website, and I'm a guest here as well. But I have about 230 questions for you, but I'll save those for the time that I can scrape up the cash to have you on our podcast. But let me just ask you, first of all, it's an honor to talk to you, and it's a real privilege.
Right.
Absolutely. And I'm one of the few that are up in the wee hours of the morning in America, along with the pocket of us that watch you, and we enjoy every single race you do. And you guys are consummate professionals in every sense of the word, and I really appreciate it. I wanted to ask you a couple questions, just one on the broadcast side of things. Obviously, as a fan, Bob, I'm 43. I've grown up watching F1 when I was a kid with my dad, and I like to brag that I got Steve Matchett his job through my emails with Bob Scanlon many years ago at Speed Vision. But when you look at the broadcast and what we've enjoyed for so long, we certainly wake up, we watch you and your team work, you have a certain amount of animation, certainly knowledge and perspective, my gosh, it oozes from the pores certainly of your cohorts being involved in this series. And this may be a bit of a banal question, but really, when you look at that broadcast, Bob, how much do you guys focus on making it entertainment?
Well, I think, entertainment is the reason we're there. If it's not fun, don't do it. Obviously, David and Peter and I and Steve all enjoy what we do. It's a challenge to make it palatable to the average person. We have to talk to such a spectrum of people when you're covering Formula One. The sophisticated fan who understands the technology and understands the history and understands the sheer complications of Formula One. But we also have to be able to speak to the person who may just be channel surfing and just arrives at a race and says, wow, this looks like something interesting. What exactly am I looking at? And that's the challenge of broadcasting, really, is to make it something that is interesting and satisfying for the broad spectrum of fans, from the very basic to the very sophisticated. And that's the way we try to approach it. When we're working on Speed, we know we have a dedicated core of fans who are listening and people who know the basic personalities. They understand the rules, the politics, the technology, and so forth. But when we go to Fox, as we're doing this weekend for the Hungarian Grand Prix, for the fourth and final race that we're doing on Fox this year, we have to step back a little bit because we realize there's a broader audience out there. Mm-hmm. We'd like to have a much bigger audience for Formula One. That may be tilting at windmills, I don't know. Formula One will probably never be as big as NASCAR in this country, but at the same time, we need to try, and so we do. So that's part of the magic. That's part of the challenge of what we do, is probably a better word, is to give everybody out there, from the most basic to the most sophisticated, something that maybe they didn't know or information that they need in order to understand what they're looking at, whether it's ambient and track temperature conditions in order to understand what the tires are doing, or whatever it might happen to be, whether it's how much money these guys make, who their girlfriends are, where they vacation, how much the cars cost, all that sort of stuff. There's so much that you need to pick and choose from in every broadcast, and that is in turn sparked by the pictures that we see. We can digress, we can riff a little bit if you like, if things get a little boring in terms of what the race is doing. But, you know, the pictures are really what we have to key off of. It's a picture medium, no matter how you look at it, more than it is a words medium.
Yeah. Yeah, and I might add on the Fox broadcast, it is refreshing. Obviously, me being an absolute sycophant for F1, you know, I'm into all the geeky stuff, and you know, I actually do care about a $1,200 wheel nut. But you know, contrary to Max, his assertion, and unfortunately, I'm not that interested in German themed prison sex parties. But having said that. One of the things, and I will say this in all honesty, is that when you guys do go to Fox, it's very, very evident that, you know, it's an A game. You got a big audience, but you know, even though you're still talking to a crowd that may be new to F1, and you realize you're reaching that, it's still not patronizing, and I appreciate that as a hardcore fan, and you guys really do carry that balance. When Fox took it over for a few races, and you weren't the commentary team, it was difficult. But so you do a great job on that. And speaking on that, if I can piggyback on that, Bob, obviously Peter Windsor is a cohort of yours, and he does a terrific job in the pit lane, and I've always been a Peter Windsor fan. How do you see, Bob, in USF1, obviously by virtue of me being a Yankee, I'm pretty excited about this. I surmise you are as well. And how do you see speed working with USF1? I thought we had an interview with Peter Windsor a few weeks ago in which he said an interesting point is that he's taking America to F1. He's not bringing F1 to America, and felt that through certain mediums, and whether the YouTube situation is going to pan out or not, how do you see speed working with USF1 in a way to expose maybe more of your viewers and help them brand F1 in America?
Well, I think there's tremendous potential for what we could do. I don't know exactly what's planned. That, as they say in the spy movies, happens above my pay grade. But I know that Peter and want to make this as accessible as possible for the American fan. I think they understand that, you know, this is not an entirely philanthropical opportunity here. I mean, they have a chance here to get the American public, the American race fan behind them, and that will behoove them. I mean, that will definitely help them in their search for sponsors and so forth. Peter and Ken both realize there's a tremendous American experience in Formula One. There's a legacy there that they can capitalize on. And I think that's something that racing generally, and certainly Formula One specifically in the Bernie Ecclestone era, has not done, which is leverage their history. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can remember being at Monza for the Italian Grand Prix and hearing my name called while I'm walking around the paddock, and I look over at this huge wrought iron fence around the paddock, and there's Dan Gurney standing outside the fence because he can't get a credential to get in. I mean, Dan Gurney, for crying out loud.
That's horrible.
Mario Andretti. Oh, why Formula One world champions or ex-Formula One drivers don't have, you know, the e-ticket credentials to get in anywhere on a Formula One weekend is just mind-boggling to me. But, you know, that doesn't make commercial sense to Bernie. So that's his decision to make, but I think they're really missing the boat there. And I think Peter agrees with me. So hopefully, you know, those guys have bitten off a tremendous amount, as I'm sure you can imagine, Todd.
Yeah, absolutely.
A part of what they're doing is hopefully to allow them to bring in the American fan, be accessible in a way that's never happened before. And what role speed might play in that, I don't know. Hopefully it will be a big one, and I hope that's the case, but you know, I'm talking with Peter and Ken. I have a friend who a decade or so ago was involved in an America's Cup sailing syndicate. And a part of their pitch to their sponsors was a program to go into the schools and demonstrate some of the technology, some of the wizardry, the magic, if you will, of Formula One, which, as any racing driver or crewman or any sophisticated fan will tell you, is space shuttle kind of stuff. You know, it's just mind-boggling. And it could be so fascinating to a new generation of young American students who see Formula One technology to enhance math and science in the schools and to get them to watch on weekends on television and to come out to races. Presumably we'll have one back here in North America and hopefully in the United States in the very near future. So, you know, I think there's a tremendous opportunity there. I hope speed will be involved. Obviously, I think we're in the we're in pole position to make that happen, and
yeah.
I hope we don't drop the ball on that. But as far as specifics right now is what that might be, you know, I really can't tell you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a great point, and you know, is when this announced came, when the announcement came out, and I certainly was you know very very excited about it, and I thought, you know, gosh, what a better tie-in, because the little sessions, the racing per match that you guys do, the access that Red Bull has given Steve and your crew to go in and have unfettered access,
yep.
Bob, to really some of the most sensitive parts of the car that, my gosh, you'd only find that stuff on microfiche, you know? So when you look at that, I'm thinking that the USF1 and having Steve, you know, local here, you're local, and my gosh, this would be such a great shoe-in to let Speed have a in-depth access. It's great. Obviously, you are in pole position for that, but we're really excited about that, and so you know everyone over at Formula1Blog.com obviously be looking for it, and I know Cole and Planet IRL will as well. So so anyway, Bob, those are my questions. As I said, I've got about another 200, but I'll turn it back over to Cole because unfortunately, Tiger, it's not my show.
Well, okay. Well, anytime you want to chat, that'd be fine.
Okay, Bob.
And I think I speak for all of everyone that has a Speed Channel, when I say that I would much rather watch a feature on USF1 than Pink's any day of the week.
You knew this was coming.
Please.
Well, right. I say nothing. I know nothing. It's
daytime, Bob. It's daytime.
Well, you know, it's funny because this is a topic that comes up a lot. Obviously, a lot of people, well, practically everybody, takes their television very personally. And to have an option like Speed, you know, and to get into the whatever part of the whole automotive world you like, whether it's, you know, collectible cars or documentaries or how-to shows or a show like Pink's or Formula One, you know, anything in between.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows what they want, and they don't hesitate to express that, and that's good because that shows the passion that we all share, and hopefully the witch doctors who conjure up our programming content will be able to hit the bullseye on that. But you know, it's a constantly moving target. You're never going to please everybody. You know, I'm a racing guy, not necessarily a car guy per se, but you know, we all just participate as best we can, and keep telling us what you want, and hopefully we'll all get there.
We want racing. We want it's speed.
Yeah.
Okay, that's enough of that. We don't want to get you in trouble, Bob.
That's okay. We hear you.
Okay. And my final question for you, and this is more of a broad spectrum question, is what was your favorite moment of your broadcasting career? That moment when you look back, you're going to say, that was just the best time of my professional career.
Oh boy, far, I hope. You know, probably the moment that I remember most. Well, there are several. I mean, obviously the weekend in May of 1994 when we had such tragedy at Imola in Italy will be with me forever.
Yep.
But you know, on a positive note. My favorite was probably Le Mans in, 1988 or 89, where Jaguar had come back. The Walkinshaw Silcut Jaguars had come back after 30 years away from Le Mans, and they lost and they lost and they lost. They got beaten by Porsche or whoever, and they kept coming back. In fact, at one point, they rode on the garage after their last car broke and dropped out of the 24 hours. They spray painted on the walls. We will be back. And everyone knows Le Mans is basically a British race that's held in France.
Yep.
And finally on this occasion, the Le Mans fleet of Jaguars with an international driving cast, including my future colleagues like Derek Daly and Danny Sullivan and so on, they came and they won. And the place just went crazy. And I was sitting in the back of a production van underneath the grandstand trying to call the end of this race, and I just remember the flags waving and the cars coming across an echelon formation and thunderous roars from the stand and weeping and wailing. I mean, it was as close as I've ever come to choking up on the air to watch you know, this tremendous outpouring of sentiment for Jaguar to come back after the disaster in 1955 and lose and lose and lose and then win. That was a moment I'll never forget, and maybe my favorite moment in broadcasting a race thus far.
That's incredible. Bob, I thought you were going to say it was drinking red wine from a Dixie cup with David Hobbs at a local diner.
Well, that's happened so many times with all things to come and being screened together. We've had a lot of fun in a lot of different ports of call around the world back when we traveled all the races. And I'll remember those moments, too, the ones that I can recall, that is. It's been a lot of fun.
You're a trooper. Bless your heart, you're a trooper.
Well, it's tough work, but somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, well, I'm counting on you.
And we appreciate you doing that. So we'll let you go here because you probably have to get up early and do the practice session. So
yes, I do.
Well, sorry to keep you up. It's about 11 o'clock Eastern here. So thanks, Bob, for joining us, and just thanks for being our voice, the voice of the fans for two decades now. Todd, do you have anything to say?
No, that's it. Bob, Okay. Thanks. It's been a real honor. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
All right.
And now we'll continue our review of the Formula One season so far. We'll just do another little wrap-up here with Todd from FormulaOneBlog.com. I want to get your opinion on a couple more things, Todd.
Sure.
One of them is, I asked this question to Pat and Declan last week. Who's in it for the championship? Is it Red Bull or is it Braun? Who's going to get it?
What was Declan's answer?
I think Dex said that Red Bull. He said they're speeding up and they're going to get it.
Wow. Okay. All right. Here's my take on it. This weekend's, I think, going to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
My jury's been out on Red Bull for the last two Grand Prix. The reason is because of the cool temperature. And we all have known that Braun suffers for heat generation in their tires in cool weather. And so the Grand Prix that Red Bull have won, China, Britain, and Germany, have all been cool temperatures. So this is supposed to be a scorcher in Hungary. I think this weekend's going to tell us. If Braun come back in pretty dominant fashion because of the heat and their new upgrades, then that's not an easy call for Red Bull. That's going to be a real challenge, and it could go down to the wire. The other side of that is if Red Bull has legitimately surpassed Braun in performance, and this weekend Red Bull comes out of the victory, I am inclined to agree with Dex.
I think Red Bull is faster, and I think they have the speed, but I honestly want to see Braun do it. You know, Button has been around forever, and he just keeps getting beat up, and he's down on his luck, and I want to see that team come from behind, and I've always been a fan of Ross Braun, and just see an underdog do it, even though they're not really an underdog now, but at the beginning of the season, they started out as one. So, do you see any more challenges coming up? Toyota showed some speed early, and Mercedes and Ferrari have both been speeding up again. So,
yeah, that's a good question. Since coming back to Europe, I am inclined to say that the team that's made the most progress developmentally, you could argue, is Red Bull. I wouldn't disagree with that. But outside of the two that seem to be competing there at the sharp end of the grid, is really probably Ferrari. And I think that they've done probably the best job of developing and coming on. However, Ferrari announced that their focus now is going to start to shift to 2010. Will they continue the amount of development for 2009? Interesting thing on this, Cole, is BMW said absolutely they're not going to stop developing the 2009 car. I think the catalyst here is that there's no in-season testing, and every one of the main contenders, McLaren, Ferrari, Renault, BMW, all of these guys, Toyota, same thing. I think all these guys are going to use the remainder of 2009 as one elaborate test session for the 2010 cars because the regulations, for all intents and purposes, aren't going to change. So if that's the case, we still may see some interesting development for the end of the year. And in answer to your query, to make a long story longer, it could be Ferrari. that might raise their game towards the back end of the season. And you might see them. As a matter of fact, I know we'll get into predictions later, but I'm kind of picking maybe Massa for a dark horse this weekend. You never know.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to look at Williams. I think they'll get some more podiums.
I think that's a very, very good choice. Uh-huh.
And as much as I hate to say it, because everyone knows I can't stand him, I think Hamilton will be on the podium by the end of the season. He showed speed in Britain and had a problem there, and Kovalainen did too, until he started blocking unjustifiably. So I think we won't see any different winners, but we'll see a shakeup on the podium.
Yeah, that could be. I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by that. I think you may have something there. We'll have to see how it plays out.
And I think that just about covers all the news. So we'll move on to the final segment here with Todd from F1B, which is our new part of the podcast here, and that's our fantasy picks. You can pick your top three and your dark horse pick who you're going to watch Sunday, really.
All right. Well, I would be disingenuous if I deviated from our podcast where we do predictions for each weekend. So I would be remiss to not at least share those with you that I have picked this weekend. And I think anybody that knows me, I'm a huge Vettel fan. Everybody knows that. But I'm going to pick the podium in this order. Button, Vettel, and Weber. We always pick a first out. I'm picking Jamie Algy is the first out.
Yes.
Welcome to the big league, son. And my dark horse, as I mentioned, I think my dark horse could be Massa. However, you may be onto something, Cole, because McLaren looked pretty darn good in Germany, and especially with Kurs. We all saw that Heikki turned into the Arno Trulli mobile chicane, and he didn't have the new aero upgrades. If Lewis had have made that pass on Weber at the beginning stick with Kurs, there's no telling how they may have fared. So you never know. But I think both Ferrari and McLaren are very cautious about suggesting they'd be winner material. But, I think dark horse could be Massa.
Okay, for my picks, top three, top step of the podium – will be in Hungary, Rubens Barrichello. I'll throw that out there and see what you say. Second will be Vettel, and third will be Button. And my dark horse pick, that one to watch, I'll take Hamilton.
Oh, okay.
Especially if he starts far back on the grid, because we've seen what he can do from pretty far back. So I think he has it in him, even though I hate to say that.
That's an interesting podium. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that'll be good to see.
Yep.
Excellent.
Well, I think that just about wraps it up here for the F1 segment. I want to thank so much Todd from Formula One, the number one blog.com.
Yeah.
He always states that on his.
Right. People get confused.
And he's been a big help, and we had a couple technical problems tonight, and he's stuck with it there, and he's big fun on his own site, so go check that out. And Todd, you want to say anything else?
Yeah, no, Cole, it's been great, and it's a real honor to. I know you're getting your podcast launched, and look, I'm just honored that you would reach out to us and look to us to come on and be a part of the F1 segment for your podcast. So it's a real honor to do this, and I really appreciate you having us on, and certainly wish all the best to planetirl.com.
Well, thank you. We'll now move on to a segment, a short little advertising segment with Lisa, our site designer. She's going to highlight some of the new features of the new site, so stick around. So after starting Planet IRL in 2008 as a place for me to come and discuss my opinions and to rant and rave about the sport I love, which is auto racing, I'm proud to announce that we've launched a brand new site with the assistance of our lovely webmaster here at Planet IRL, Lisa, a.k.a. Lanica, and she's here today to discuss some of the new features that you'll see on the site. So take it away.
Thanks, Cole, and I think my Lanica reputation precedes me, but I am very happy to be part of the new PlanetIRL.com website. So I think first and foremost, you all will see a new look and feel. And moving on, I mean, really, you can see it for yourself. So starting out with our new fan forum, which is a bulletin board where all of us can interact and share our thoughts with all of our fellow racers and race fans. We're going to cover IndyCar, Formula One, sports cars, really anything that we want to discuss, except NASCAR. But we definitely want to hear from you, so be sure to take a moment and register for our forum.
Yeah, just sign up in there. It's real simple. We already have a couple new members signed up, and we only launched a couple hours ago. Come in and discuss your opinions, and let's try to keep it above a Champ Car Fanatics level, please, if we could. So what other new features have we instituted?
I think I might have to take offense a little bit to that Champ Car statement. I did, after all, start out my racing fanaticism with Champ Car, so.
Well, we can't all be perfect.
I know. We'll overlook that, but I did move over to IndyCar eventually, so all's not lost.
Good, good, good.
All right, so moving on, we also have a new photo gallery, which we've loaded up some photos on Flickr, but we would love to see your racing photos. So be sure to check out our photo gallery tab. Any racing photos you have, whether they're, you know, from the stands or from the garage, we want to see that. So definitely interact with that feature.
And I've already posted some in there for my trip to Indy this year, and I'll be sure to post more from Kentucky, where we'll have our Planet IRL meetup down there. I've posted all the lovely debauchery I've seen, and we'd love to see your debauchery too. So go ahead and sign up for Flickr and put your pictures in our photo group.
And I've tried to do my debauchery from Homestead, but I may be your fearless webmaster, but I'm still working out, figuring out the Flickr. I am a Google chick after all, so we should have used Picasa. Also, on a new feature, we have a live race chat. So we hope to hear from you at Edmonton this weekend. If you go to the website, you will see a live race chat page with Chatroll as our sponsor. So please be sure to log in and tell us what you're thinking during the live race. I know we're excited about it.
Yeah, for several races now, we've had kind of a private chat with a few fans, and all the bloggers get together and we just have fun and talk during the race on IM. And now that's open to the public, and you just go over there where it says pages and click live race chat, and or any time, not just during the race, just chat with your fellow fans and give them your opinions during the race.
One of our other features is the weekly Planet IRL podcast that we just launched. Be sure to join in and listen to not only the Planet IRL team speak about what's going on weekly in racing news, but we'll also have special guest appearances, including some race drivers, and a good teaser coming up soon.
Yes, as you know, this week we were joined by Speed TV's Bob Varsha and the lovely guys from FormulaOneBlog.com. Next week, after Edmonton, we'll have a former Indy 500 Rookie of the Year joining us to talk about the happenings at Edmonton, and I have some more guests planned for the future coming up, so be sure to check those out.
And last but not least, we have to do our marketing bit. Be sure to check out the new Planet IRL store, where you can get all of your racing gear. And not to mention, there is a really awesome beer stein with our brand new logo, which we just had done with our new colors. So you can, you know, cheer on the IZOD drinking game every race weekend.
With the new Planet IRL, our favorite item in the entire store, the beer stein. It's Lisa's favorite, and I think I should get her one for Kentucky, because we all know Lisa loves her Tito's. So we have some really good prices on some items with our new logo, courtesy of Tyler Tucker and TuckGraphics.com. So check out the store and represent.
Well, it may not be Lisa's favorite, but it's definitely Lanica's. And
yes.
I want to see that beer stein filled in Kentucky.
I will fill that beer stein in Kentucky.
Then it is all worth it. So, hey, guys, enjoy the new Planet IRL. Be sure to go to the fan forum. Leave us your feedback. your suggestions. We want to hear from you. We want to grow on this and make it better. So thanks.
And again, I want to thank Lisa again. She's given up countless hours over the last few weeks to build and design the site from the ground up. I want to thank all the other people who have helped us do this. And join us next week on the podcast. It'll be back to the normal group again with Lisa and Paul. And again, our special guest, a former Indy 500 Rookie of the Year. I want to thank Todd and Steve from FormulaOneBlog.com and Bob Varsha from Speed TV for joining us this week. And I think that'll just about wrap it up. So thanks for joining us.
No, another crash and it's upside down. We've got a car upside down. It's Marco Andretti.
Marco, you okay?
There are actually 7 previous winners of the Monaco Grand Prix starting in tomorrow's race, and 4 of them are Michael Schumacher.
All right, pit this lap. Watch the speed limit. 3, 2, 1. Watch here.
A lot of people here are really debating whether Ricardo Rossi is Formula One material.
Well, it's a fairly short debate, mate. I am so annoyed. Now, I can't tell you how annoyed I am. I just can't believe that we had the problems that we had in Brazil. And I come here and we have even more damn problems. So, you know, the car should not be where it is.